This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
On the sneak, Kyle drives his way in, touchdown. Third and 16, Mahomes rolling out, looking, firing, intercepted, picked off by Cooper DeJean, gets a block, DeJean is in, touchdown. Four-man rush, pressure again, Mahomes in trouble, Mahomes sacked again, third and an A for Philadelphia. Here's Mahomes. It's intercepted again! Hurts lets it go. Complete A.J. Brown. He's in! Touchdown, Eagles! Now the Eagles get it back. Looking to run some clock. Or maybe throw the dagger. Hurts going deep. For it all, Devontae Smith! He has got it! Touchdown! For the second time, the Vince Lombardi Trophy is headed to Philadelphia. Eagles fly in Super Bowl 59.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on Western New York Sports Giant, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Well, hi, everybody. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. It's a nice Monday, right? It's a nice Monday.
Is it, though? We got this question. Is it a victory Monday?
I mean...
Do we call it a victory Monday today?
Probably not, but... Sure feels like one, doesn't it? I mean, it's the closest feeling we've got.
I mean, it feels pretty good. I'm pretty happy. This is not the happiest we could have been today, but...
No, that's right. It feels pretty good. There are some parts of it that don't feel so good when you look at how exposed the Chiefs were able to be.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that. Yeah. Jeremy and Joe, happy off-season. Happy here we go. Did every single team have a coordinated on to next year graphic that they tweeted? I saw the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Bills. I don't know if there were like a million more of those.
You're guessing everybody had one in the bank ready to go?
It seemed planned. They all had a season starts now, 2025. That's when I learned that next year's Super Bowl is in San Francisco.
Maybe not everybody was in. I just picked a random team. First that I searched was the Raiders. They did not have one. They did not have one. Maybe the AFC West teams just resigned to the fact that they will not win their division and go deep in the playoffs, though. So
possibly.
I don't think the Eagles tweeted it out.
That's right. They're still living in this season.
I would assume they did not tweet out.
Do you want a very early stat of the day for you? Very early. This one came from Jay Kuda, who is a mostly baseball writer, does White Sox stats, and apparently he had this one, that it's now nine times in a row that the team traveling west defeats the team traveling east.
The team traveling west defeats the team traveling east. Because the Chiefs are going east to get to New Orleans.
Yep, and the Eagles are going west. Okay. Now, sometimes both teams go east, both teams go west, whatever. But it's 9 in a row, dating back to 2002, that the team traveling east loses to the team traveling west.
Wait,
so,
how does that date back to 2002? Oh, because there would be years where they're both going the same direction.
Yeah, it doesn't always happen.
I see, right.
Yep.
Right, duh. Okay, that makes sense.
So when it was in Vegas, the team traveling east was San Francisco. They lost to Kansas City, who traveled west. When it was in Atlanta, Rams lose to New England, who traveled west. And there's a lot of New Englands in here because they're always traveling west. It's the only way they really can go.
Yeah.
Whatever. I found that to be a funny kind of stat.
Okay, so what we need to figure out now is where is the next Super Bowl?
It's San Francisco. Okay. And it's going to be really tough to travel
east. Yeah.
To get to San Francisco.
Yeah, I don't think it's happening there.
No. Fly around the globe.
True.
Go the other way?
Just go the other way.
But you wouldn't want to do that because you would be losing then.
That's right.
You'd be on the wrong side of it. Yeah.
That's anyway.
Yeah.
Weird stat. So, all right. So the Chiefs get hammered. And it was glorious. It was absolutely glorious. And I think it's not odd for the entire football world to revel in a dynasty getting their clock cleaned. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
A lot of violent imagery at the moment, but like, we'll go clock cleaned. They got destroyed start to finish, and it was amazing. It was amazing. Two other teams, do I turn it off when it's 34-0? Maybe.
If that game is the Ravens and the Packers and it's 34-0
might
in
turn it off.
The third quarter, I might have the game off.
If it's 34-0 Chiefs, that game is definitely going off.
100%.
And I mean, I feel like the Wicked Witch is dead here. I mean, you know, I know the Chiefs will be back and still be good, but the pictures of the Eagles, of Jalen Hurts outside the locker room, sitting with the Lombardi Trophy, all these moments where other players, I know it's crazy, right? Other teams also can reach the mountaintop as the Chiefs don't get there. I mean, it's just, it meant a lot to me.
They had a first down on their first play of the game, the Chiefs did, and they did not have another first down until the the 14th, 18 mark of the third quarter.
Yeah.
They went that long without getting a first down. After their first play, which they had one. I mean, it was
brutal.
The defensive performance we saw, like, didn't we know immediately that it was going to be a game like that? I mean, the Eagles took a minute to get going on offense, but, like, I don't know. It looked like the Chiefs were not going to have the answers on offense. But, like, even them, right? Like, it's, oh, here we go. The Nick Wright tweet from yesterday, like, oh, they're down 10, game started. Like, the Chiefs do that a lot, right? Where slow start and, like, okay, they're down by 14. Of course, this is still a football game. But then, like, then when Mahomes starts turning the ball over the way he did and he was just missing throws, like, okay, maybe they don't just have the magic pixie dust to sprinkle over this game yesterday. So, I 24-0 at half. I couldn't wait for the second half.
Yeah, I know.
And the game is over.
Yep. And you always have to be careful. Like, are they going to find answers and come back? Will the Eagles barf on themselves? Because that's what teams do against the Chiefs, right? They let them back in the game.
Right.
And that just never happened. So, you know, it's whatever. There's Bills context to it. There's plenty to get to about the game itself. But, man, for Mahomes, it was just misery. And maybe, listen, we can be haters, right? Why not?
Sure.
Why not just be haters? Watching that dude have the worst game of his life was awesome.
Yes, it was.
It was awesome. And the thing maybe that's frustrating is, They didn't lose a bunch of guys in the Bills game. This isn't a scenario where, oh, their entire offensive line got hurt against the Bills, so now it's all backups. That was the same line.
Yeah, that happened to them against Tampa, right?
Right.
When Tampa, they played Tampa in the Super Bowl, they were missing, was it three everybody. Starters on the offensive line?
Yes. Yeah. They were very banged up. This time, they're not missing 10 pieces. Their offense went in there fully formed. The offense that the Bills could not stop, of course, and allowed, you know, 21 first half points last previous game. You know, like, they were just dominated by a Vic Fangio defense with a front four that got after them. And I don't know how many other ways to say it was glorious. It was. I'm waiting to go in on what it all means for the Bills. I just want to kind of bask in how glorious it was.
Yeah, they were not the more talented team.
No.
Right? Like, isn't that really what it comes down to? The Eagles roster is
loaded.
Stacked. I mean, we'll get to the Bills part of this, because I think there's a lot of correlation you could pull from this game to the Bills. That's like real, like not just like, oh, well, this team won. Let's just, you know, let's compare the two. Like there are things the Bills have been trying to be good at that the Eagles are incredible at. And that's what helped beat the Chiefs yesterday. But they just have talent everywhere, right? Like the quarterback is pretty good. But when he is surrounded by an elite offensive line, an elite running back, two elite wide receivers, an elite defensive line, I mean, that's enough. You know, like, I didn't mention every position group. I didn't mention every position. But they have a receiver who's arguably one of the best receivers in football, arguably the best running back in football. I mean, do they have three linemen I could maybe say this about? On the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball, like they have some of the best players at their position in the league. And even Kansas City, this has been more of a Bills point. What do the Chiefs have in that area? They have Mahomes.
Yeah.
But like Worthy is really good and was an amazing rookie, but he is not like AJ Brown, best receiver in football.
No, their studs are on defense and they couldn't stop Philly. Like,
yeah,
even,
like
even with their studs.
McDuffie would be the guy that's like, okay, that's supposed to be, you know, star player, one of the best at his position in the league. And when he went 1-on-1 against A.J. Brown, it looked like a non-contest.
Yep. Yeah, Chris Jones, McDuffie, they've got like Chris four Jones. Or five pieces on their defense that are very, very good. But they had no answers. You know, you mentioned in correlations, again, like how far we want to go in comparisons about the Bills. I don't know, if you're a Bills fan and you skipped that game, maybe you jumped in halfway through it because you heard they're down 24-0.
Yeah.
Get to the game.
Anyone that boycotted the game? I was texting buddies I knew were boycotting the game. Like, you should get to the game.
You got to get to
you
it.
Got, you got to turn you, the game on.
Right. Do you want to see sad Mahomes or not? You have an opportunity to see sad Kelce and sad Mahomes.
I texted one friend maybe like right in the start of the third quarter, and I think he turned it on. He said the first play he saw was the fumble by Mahomes that got turned over by a penalty where he got crunched in the face.
Yes.
Was it Jalen Carter? Who just, he's like, oh, this is what this game has been? I'm like, this is exactly what this game has been.
Yeah. He was obliterated every single play. He had no chance.
The picks he was throwing were just easy ones.
And, you know, pass rush is one thing, but the reason the pass rush was able to get there is because Philadelphia had good coverage in the secondary. Like, the Bills, of course, have their leaky spots back there. They definitely don't have the second. Like, it'll be a lot today about, Joe, how the Bills don't have the Eagles' defensive line, and that's not incorrect, but they definitely don't have the Eagles' secondary. No way right now. The Eagles' secondary is tremendous. The Eagles, whatever. They look like a complete team in every way. And Nick Sirianni walking off the field, some of the stuff he was talking about, was like, this team is loaded. Of course. Everybody pulls their part. Everybody does their part. This team is loaded. And the Eagles also, I mean, they really stick a thumb right in the eye of anybody that's talking about everything's got to be kumbaya. That team might hate each other. That team might, it's a family that argues all the time. Remember the guy that said A.J. Brown had to be cut the day after reading a book?
Yeah.
Like, you just, to me, that's the stuff that I latch onto. Like, you don't have to buy into this dumb stuff that football world wants you to think. Like, you can't have that happen. Nick Sirianni's lost control of his sideline.
Yeah.
Who said that? Somebody said that. It's ridiculous, of course. Like, too much stuff paid attention to, people caring and people clashing while caring.
I did think about Diggs a few times yesterday because Diggs gave us, what, two sideline moments in his entire Bills career? Was it even two?
It was
one against Cincinnati. Is there even another one? Like, maybe there was one. I'm just forgetting about it. But
there was another one reported from the opener against the Jets the following year where Allen snapped at him.
Okay, right. That's right. That we didn't see on TV, but that was reported by Tim Graham on that. The Eagles, A.J. Brown gave us two last night.
Yeah, in the game.
In the game where, like,
in the game. You
he's yelling
me on
at
a throw.
The coach, and then he's getting into it the positional coach, and, like, because he had been missed and whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't, for that team especially, it does not matter. Over the last 12 months, you have had the coach and the quarterback at each other's throats, right? And they never really, even this year, I feel like, in what I saw, never were, like, chummy, you know? Like, wasn't Hurts asked a couple weeks ago about his relationship with Sirianni? He's like, you know, maybe. He gave some answer along the lines of...
He took the straitjacket off, that one?
He took the straitjacket off, right? Yeah. So, like, there was tension between the quarterback and the coach, and there was tension between the coach and the receiver, and there was tension between the quarterback and the wide receiver. Like, it really was, like, for those that remember, what, is it the 88 Bills or the 89 Bills, whatever, the bickering Bills, when they were always yelling at each other in the locker room before they started making Super Bowls? That was the Eagles this year. And it didn't matter. Because, listen, you can win with everyone pulling your weight and everybody doing your job and everybody getting along and loving each other. The Eagles seem like they hated each other, but they won because they were the most talented team. And maybe that's exaggerating that they really hate each other, but talent wins. Talent wins, and that team had talent. And as much as they bickered or had tension, it just was out. It was overruled by they were more talented.
And they are also... Are they not, Joe? That's what everybody eats looks like at its highest level. It's Barkley, Goddard,
Brown,
A.J. Brown, Smith. Devonta Smith. Like,
yeah. And Jahan Dotson.
Jahan Dotson.
Man, praying for those that had him first touchdown.
But yesterday. They are they not? That is it? That is everybody? You have absolute studs. When you, you know, we heard an awful lot. Well, it's actually good to not know where the ball is going to go. Okay, maybe if you don't know where it's going to go because one side is A.J. Brown, the other side is Devonta Smith. Like, that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
So I thought about Brown a lot. Like, Brown won't get enough credit. Do you know that the Eagles did not lose a single game this year that Hurts and Brown started and finished? Not one.
Like, without getting injured?
Without one of the two leaving with an injury. Hurts missed a couple games, right, with a concussion, left a game with a concussion, and Brown missed a couple games, like hamstring. When those two played, they won every game.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Barkley got all of the headlines. It was an odd game, too. You know, in terms of who are we to criticize, Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady, but, man, Brady's going to get a lot of flack for how he performed. Kevin Burkhardt was not good in this game. Kevin Burkhardt acted like when it was 34-0, the Chiefs were just a whisper away. Over and over again. Let's see what kind of magic Mahomes has. Buddy, there's like 15 minutes left. This game is over. You can call it. And they would stop a run play. The Chiefs would stop a run play on 1st and 10 after the Eagles had gone 60 yards on that drive. Like, oh, look at them again. They really have the answers in the run game. Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Great observation. How's it playing out for them?
Did you hear Brady making a big deal about the false start penalty that the Eagles got on the Jake Elliott kick that would have made it, I think, 37-0 at the time? He's like, oh, you know, he's not going to be as comfortable now, like backing up to 50 yards. I'm like, buddy, they're up 40.
I know.
If he misses the kick, whatever. He's going to walk over to the sideline, high-five his coach. He doesn't care about them winning the Super Bowl. Tough. Brady more so, though, was really tough to listen to. Man, the fourth quarter, once the game is over and it basically becomes like a live podcast because the guys are talking more, like, then you were really seeing Brady in his true colors and just nothing interesting.
Well, that's where he needed someone to engage him. He's talking about how he only took two unsportsmanlike conducts in his career, yelling at officials. And I thought Brady was trying to bring Mike Pereira in there, like, hey, let's talk about what it's like to get yelled at.
Oh,
And Pereira, like, just wouldn't take it. He wouldn't take, I don't want to call it bait. It would have been a funny conversation. It could have been a good moment. Here's Brady saying, like, I used to yell at officials all the time. Mike, do you guys ignore that? And Pereira fumbled that because it was, I forget what his answer even was, something along the lines of, we just ignore certain guys like you. Like, okay, that's not true. Why don't you go ahead and give an honest answer that's not whether or not, you know, somebody's feet were in bounds.
There was something weird there last night because Brady another time kicked it to Pereira for what? Oh, what was the something?
It was crossbar. It was 37-0 and he's asking him questions or whatever.
Yeah, but like he wasn't there. And then Pereira wasn't there when Brady kicked it to him. And then he was there, but he just kind of mumbled like, yeah, hit the crossbar. Like, he kind of gave Brady like a, dude, shut up type of answer, which I'm like, whoa, we got trouble between those two or something? I don't know. Brady almost got caught with a hot mic, by the way, after the game, because he was on the mic when they tried to go to Terry Bradshaw. And he was talking. He didn't say anything, but yeah. Fox had a tough night.
That's right. That ceremony was clumsy. I liked the score bug.
Get out of here.
Only because it was obnoxiously reminding everyone it was 34-0.
Because it was enormous.
Yes,
huge.
The score bug, I agree, was not good. But the more crooked that game got, the more I thought, you know what? I like this thing. It's like it might as well be flying a banner over the stadium about how big the score is. Like, the Chiefs are down by 34 if you just tuned in.
It just reminded me of, like, a high school broadcast.
Yeah.
That score bug. Like, the numbers in the middle without anything behind it, too. But, okay. Yeah, I guess that's right. Because the numbers were huge.
It felt like the score bug was trolling the Chiefs, and I was into that big time. I also, we're about to get into the take-pocalypse. Today we'll bring a lot of takes, and I fully expected one, and I'll be honest, I don't mind it because I'm in the mood to hate the Chiefs and hate on them. You know you're going to see this. This is a LeBron point, and you've talked about this before. This loss for Mahomes is going to stick. It's going to stick for years because, you know what they will say, Joe, I've already seen a couple. Brady never lost like that in a Super Bowl. Tom Brady never had that game. You can't be the GOAT if you have that game. And, of course, I think that's probably disingenuous. It's not exactly Mahomes' fault. He was under pressure the entire game. A 50% pressure rate with not a single blitz in the game. So it wasn't exactly his fault, but I am, you know what? On a day like today, I'm here to listen to that. That's right. Brady never had a game like that. I guess you can't be the GOAT. Sorry.
Yeah. Not the GOAT. At least in the goat chase. Brady had a half like that, right?
He kind of did that against
the Falcons.
They were down 28-3.
28-3, and he threw a pick six, and there was a picture of him sitting on the turf as the guy ran it back for a pick six that I think everyone thought was going to be like the cover of every newspaper the next morning.
That was the moment for me last night, was when Cooper DeJean had that pick six. I thought, like, okay, Brady did that and then came back and scored right away. And I thought Brady would actually mention that. I don't think he did. But, you know, Mahomes had no answers. None.
No, I thought, I really thought when it was officially over for me, because I thought same thing, like 24-0. They've come back from double-digit deficits in like every Super Bowl, right? Like the Brady-Falcons point. I'm like, okay, let's see if they have it in them. And they went, did they go back-to-back first downs to start the third quarter? And like, all right, here they go. They're going no huddle here, and like this is where they're gonna get it back in the game. And then it was back-to-back sacks, where it's just like, okay, no. There's nothing they can do. They are not blocking this line, and they are not getting open quickly enough. We might have mixed in a drop to DeAndre Hopkins maybe on that drive that was pretty egregious that should have been caught. But it was like, man, he didn't have 3 seconds.
No.
He didn't have 3 seconds the whole night. He needed either one guy to get open quick, and that wasn't happening, or he needed his line to hold up for like 4 or 5 seconds, and he wasn't getting either last night. That Eagles defense was not going to let him do anything.
803-0550 is our phone number, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. I watched the entire game from my bed on my phone because I was sick, which was... It made it memorable.
Did the game lift you back up, though? Was that what the healing process was, the Chiefs getting pummeled in front of the entire country?
I'm sure it helped. Still a little touch and go this morning. We'll see. I'm broadcasting from home, so I don't give you whatever I had, which was, I don't know, like a 24, 36-hour bug. But, yeah, it was like a fever dream, Joe. I was in and out, wake up, look at the score. Oh, 24-0. This is the best. Fall back asleep. I missed the halftime show because I fell asleep. I'm sure I'll go back and watch that. But yeah, it's
certainly a polarizing halftime show.
I guess so.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, sure.
I think I enjoyed it though. We can get to it. I enjoyed it more for the shots at Drake that were just right, like on purpose, more than the actual. The music was fine too, though.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
Should the Bills pay top five running back money to James Cook? Yes. No. I'll top out at it's not 5 to 10 million. It's supposed to be ranked 5 to 10. Sorry. That's the specifics on like top 5 to 10 running back money. Running back 11 is Derrick Henry at 8 million.
Yeah.
And James Cook is definitely going to ask for more than 8 million a year. So top five. Yes. Maybe 5 to 10 or no. Don't pay running backs.
I wonder if that's where the Bills would be, though. Like, I have no sense for what they would want on that front. Like, we know what Cook wants. He's made it very clear.
Yep. As much money as possible. Which, by the way, no problem with him wanting that. Someone in the YouTube chat said he better be careful, or he'll be irrelevant like his brother. His brother did it right because his brother got a big contract.
His brother also, I think, held out.
His brother got a 5-year, $63 million deal and faded away quickly. And every running back's got to know that's how this works, right? Hey, listen, of any position, you don't have time. You've probably got one crack at this, so you got to make sure you get as much as you can. You got to secure the bag because your career is going to be over fast. Dalvin Cook went from really explosive back with the Vikings to the Jets bringing him in, and it's over.
Yeah.
It went fast for Dalvin Cook.
You know, I there's dots that are now connecting in my head a little bit about Cook on this front, and I wonder what type of offseason we're headed for with him, if any, because he's going into a contract year. He's made it clear what he wants. He's already sending out the amount of money he wants. His brother is doing the same thing, but it's not him. His brother's in his ear, though. And his brother, just reading about, like, he didn't quite hold out into training camp. Maybe he did for a couple days, but he held out throughout the whole offseason. And it was, he said, I'm going to hold out until I get the deal I want. So he wasn't at all the offseason stuff for Minnesota that year, and they ended up paying him. So he got his deal. But, right, what is he telling his brother? He's probably telling him, like, you got to do it. You got to get it done now. Contract year, the age, the way it works, the position. Like, look how quickly I was out of the league after I signed my extension. It was three years, basically, and he was toast. And at the same time, Cook, everything sounds like he's just a different person since the beginning of his career. Like, McDermott has talked about Cook in the AFC Championship game, even, right? Cook yelling at him on the sideline. Like, he likes it.
Yep.
Like, he talked about that that backfield is competitive. Guys want the ball. And I bet you he's talking about Cook a lot. If Cook's the one that's yelling at him on the sidelines, he was pretty vocal about not making the Pro Bowl, right? When he didn't make it, like, he was right out there on social media, like, I should have been in the Pro Bowl. So, you know, he's more fiery. I think he is, you know, as much as everybody eats, sounds like it has to be the end-all, be-all, I think it's fine if a guy wants the ball. And maybe Cook, there was a little bit of that this year. I don't know. Everything kind of sounds like he is going to want to get paid. And that maybe he would be willing to say, all right, you don't want to pay me going into my contract year? All right, I'm not showing up. I'm not sure if he actually wouldn't show up. But again, like, I would be thinking about it. I would at least be thinking about the possibility that he could pull that card.
Sure. His total value of his contract, Cook, on 4 years.
So he'll play second round rookie deal.
Second round rookie deal, 4 years, is worth $5.8 million. So he's,
that's the total?
That's the total.
Wow. That's wild.
That's total. And I'm looking at Dalvin Cook here. When Dalvin Cook signed his extension, he played 3 years, Joe, and then got an extension. In the final year of his
And he was a second-round pick.
He was.
Yeah.
He had made $4.9 million and then was holding out, got his contract, and the cash he made in year one of the new deal, which would have been his fourth season, so the extension kicks in right away, $16.4 million. So basically, if James Cook is following his brother's lead, which I wouldn't have, honestly, I don't have any problem if he wants to do this. This is how it works. Right. It's what you have to do. I'm going to go in the final year of a deal. I might blow out my knee and my career is over. I'm basically risking, what, $15 million for a year?
Right.
Not even $15 million per year. I'm talking just $15 cash right up front to play for you and do the best I can. And if I get a knee injury, it's over for me. So I think the idea of a Cook holdout could happen. The Bills have also, if you think about this, how many guys have they let go to the final year of a deal and say, we're going to bet on ourselves? They did that with Gabe.
They did it with Gabe. They did it with Jordan Poyer.
Yes,
right?
They did.
Because we were wondering about him, and he ended up just showing up.
To me, Gabe is the more interesting one because Gabe Davis is a really productive player for them for three full seasons. And that year going into training camp, we wondered if he would get paid, if the Bills would pay him. And Davis was willing to say, I'll bet on myself. And he played without a contract.
Yeah.
And same kind of thing. Gabe Davis on a 4-year, or a round four contract, made no money, bet on himself, risked it, went to free agency, got paid. Good for him. If he fades away, it doesn't matter. He got a lot of guaranteed money, which is what he was trying to do. And maybe, you know, his career bounces back in Jacksonville. Who cares? Like, these guys are you know, playing football to play. Mm-hmm. But the way the draft works, when you get to this spot, I'll never forget the time you and I were playing in one of these Bills media events, and we were playing with Dawson Knox and Jay Kumerow.
Yeah.
And this is a story about, like, something Dawson Knox said that's not, you know, any sort of state secret. But he and Kumerow were talking about a player, I forget even who it was, in the league. And Knox just simply said, he get paid? Mm-hmm. And that stuck in my head as something where when you're a player in the NFL, there are 2 days in your life, the day you get drafted and the day you get paid. The day you get paid is a very different day. James Cook, oh, you're going to Buffalo, 4 years. It'll be $5 million for your 4 years. If it goes well, you'll write your name on a piece of paper, and it'll guarantee you $50 million. That's the second day in your NFL career. And that's what Cook's going to be after, is that day.
He gets less money per year right now than Nyheim Hines does. Who's on? Could you even tell me what team he's on?
That's nuts.
He's on Cleveland, by the way, if you're interested. It's everybody.
That's nuts.
The names: Chase Edmonds, Samaje Perine, Daria Gumbawale, Trey Benson, Zach Charbonnet, Jeff Wilson, Amir Abdullah.
Makes more than James
Really,
Cook.
It's anybody on a second contract.
Right.
Anybody on it, but DJ Dallas.
Even a bum, the Cardinals. A bum second contract.
A bum second contract is going to be higher. The thing that's interesting, though, is those are all good comparisons. I have no earthly idea what the Bills will operate like at this position with a second contract, because they've never done it. The whole time they've been here, right? This is year nine of Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. They've never, to my knowledge, maybe it was a smaller one, have they ever done a second contract negotiation with a running back?
The only thing they did was they gave McCoy an extension to come.
When what? They traded for him?
They traded for him.
But that wasn't McDermott and Bean. That's
you're right.
That's
sorry.
That's Rex and Whaley.
Sometimes I forget those, like, 2 years of Rex existed.
Yeah.
You're right. They've not paid a running back.
They've never paid.
They've shuffled in third guys all the time. They've drafted. It's almost like,
have they even extended like brought back a guy in a 1 year deal that was like a lesser name guy?
A Ty Johnson?
I don't even know that they've done that. Just not that it even matters to this, because this is bigger, but I don't know what they think. I don't know what they would think in this spot. Singletary never really pushed them to this limit, right? Like, he never had the season Cook just did. Cook is good. Singletary was fine the whole time he was here, and he was a starting running back for, like, what, 4 years? But he never had the season James Cook just did, with 1,300 yards from scrimmage and 16 touchdowns. He never did. He never was in the argument as, oh, he might be one of the best 10 backs in football. So, I guess I don't really have a good guess. If the Bills in their office right now were thinking, yeah, we're not going over 8 for him. Like, what if he wants to stay for 8, take a little bit of a hometown discount, that's the most we're ever doing for a running back. Would I be that surprised?
No.
Versus if they were saying, yeah, we would go up to 13, we'll make him one of the 5 highest paid running backs in football. I'm not sure I'd be surprised by that either. Like, I just don't, it's hard to know what the Bills would want to do here when there really is no prior precedent for them with a player in this position, in this situation.
You want to know the market value according to SpotTrack?
Sure.
4 years, $40 million.
Exactly 10 million a year?
10.2 per year. Yep.
That's, like, right there. I have no idea if the Bills would be up for that.
It'll be a great exercise in, will they pay a guy?
Yeah.
And will they let him go to...
When they have other guys to pay, like, we went through it. They have
a lot of guys.
They have 4 other guys that they're going to need to pay.
Right, Myles Garrett and... Oh, sorry. I'm jumping the gun here. 803-0550. This is one of the fun parts. I mean, maybe not fun, but... Football's family. We're family. We're family. McDermott raves. $10 million a year. Ooh. We going to break our own policy here? Are we going to do that? Or are we going to make it? I mean, ugly is one way to say it. If Cook, in fact, did want to hold out, I mean, could it get ugly? It could. It really could. On defensive tackle, Daniel Jeremiah had this about the upcoming NFL draft, that last year, he graded 12 defensive tackles as starters, guys that could be NFL starters. Last year's class, he put 12 starter grades down.
Okay.
And this year, right now, he has 24 starting defensive tackle grades.
Okay.
So it's a loaded defensive tackle class, if that's something that interests you. And that clip there from John Ledyard coming back. You know, all right, so copycat league, every once in a while we get to this. It's always true that if you can get to the quarterback rushing four, you should want to do that. Is that new? Is anybody acting like that is new?
That's not new.
That's not new.
That's how the Giants beat Brady in their first Super Bowl.
They just rushed
for with Tuck, Umanura, and Strahan and whatever, and they got there.
The Bucs did it to Mahomes and the other one. So every 7 years, it happens twice, and the football world says, oh, I mean, look at this. Well, you know, I think a lot of these teams are going to try and get there with four. Like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same as hoping to have a franchise quarterback. Everybody wants to have that. It's not exactly easy to get,
right,
to just get there with four. Haven't the Bills known this and tried this the whole time? They've spent tons of assets on defensive ends.
Even without the group, they've tried to be that. Like, they're not a team that they've had their moments. They're not a team that's been like super blitz heavy.
No, in fact, if I'm thinking, was it a Ram game? Was it the opener 3 years ago now, where they beat Stafford and the Rams with no blitzes? It was one of the Sunday's Super Bowl was one of three no blitz games in the last however many years, and the Bills have one of those. They might even have two.
They might have had one this year. Did they have one against the Jets, maybe?
They don't blitz. Okay. They want to get there with four if they can, and you know, when you can't get there with four is when you maybe start to. So I don't know that I've got any takeaway from this Eagles win for the Bills. What they have to do that's different is they have to hit, because Rousseau, is that a hit? Sure, he's a nice player. That's not a miss. But that year they draft Boogie Basham, and that's definitely a miss. They traded him away for next to nothing.
Yep.
Epinesa is a guy that plays, and that's fine. Second-round pick, you probably would be... If Epinesa was a fifth-round pick, you'd be really happy about it. But a second-round pick, like, okay, that's a guy.
Would he play in the Eagles, though?
He might be in the rotation, I guess. I don't know.
He certainly wouldn't start. Like, he's fine. He's fine.
He's a guy.
You want a hell-raising unit like the Eagles, though, you want to be better. The guys that are on the field, I think you want to be better than A.J. Epinesa.
But on the Garrett thing, isn't Garrett a little bit like, if you'll go with me here, Saquon Barkley in some level? Where it's a different position, of course, which is why you're going to have to give up more to get him. But why are Barkley's teams before him not any good? Well, it's not his fault. He's amazing, and you can only do so much. But when you plug him in as the final piece to an offense, which the Eagles did, you got the most out of him you could.
Mm-hmm.
And for Garrett, every single team should want him. And if you are the Titans and you get him, what should you expect? About, what, five wins? And an awesome defensive end.
Yeah.
And if you're the Bills and you add him, what should you expect? Probably about 14 wins and an awesome defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole point about good players playing together and having as many good players as possible. While there should be 31 teams that should try to go get Garrett, there are probably five teams that should really try to get him. And the Bills are on that list.
Yeah.
Because I don't need all these draft picks. I can't think of a price. I'm not ready to say, like, I can't think of a price I wouldn't pay, but what is the argument against it? No, we shouldn't. We should just use a couple more picks instead. Aren't the Bills some version? You've got fantasy football teams like this. You have five receivers that are all really good.
Yep.
You should trade three of them for Jamar Chase.
Yes.
That's what you should do.
Yes.
Because you have a spot on your roster that you'd like to get the best player possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I have that, I've lifted every other position up. I can fill in much more easily. Instead of these first-round picks I'm going to trade away, instead of hoping they turn into Myles Garrett, boom, I have Myles Garrett. Now I'll use the picks that I still have to fill in and hope to find a Rousseau-level guy in the second round or the third round or...
For you the know, Bills, I mean, they pick
Solomon,
up
whatever,
contributors like, in the fifth, sixth, and seventh often.
Yeah. I think the Garrett thing is almost as easy a fit as you could ask for. Or if you want it to be Crosby or, I mean, Khalil Mack is cheaper because he's probably not as productive. He's older.
And you don't have to trade for him.
Right. Just a contract. So that could be an answer. But one of these big fish at the defensive end position seems to me like a really good idea. What Khalil Mack sounds like, though, to be honest, doesn't Khalil Mack sound a lot like Leonard Floyd? Doesn't Khalil Mack sound a lot like Mario Addison? Like, this guy's had a really good career. He's at the end. Will he take 1 year, $10 million? And Mac probably gets more than that because he's still been pretty good.
Well, what about the guy from Sunday? What about Josh Sweat? He's 27. And he was incredible on Sunday. He's got okay numbers. Like, he's got... It's not Garrett, right? Like, and this is just sacks, but 8, 6.5, 11, 7.5. Like, okay. That's his last 4 years. Like, he's good.
That's pretty good.
He's a pretty good player.
And what did he have on Sunday? He had a guard. He had a guard playing left tackle.
Yeah. I mean, and he has the benefit of Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, Milton Williams. Like, he has destroyers pushing the pocket back where Mahomes has nowhere to go. And, like, I'm not taking all credit away from Sweat. I'm just assuming it's easier to be an edge rusher when those dudes are in the middle.
Yep.
And he was able to get home. So he's a good player. That's a big contract, though, isn't it? Like, that's almost like, I'm not saying this makes it a bad idea. Does that feel like a move like the Drought Bills would have made? Like, guy that had 8 sacks, and we're going to be the team that go, like, when, remember when they signed Mario Williams, but didn't they sign another guy that same year?
Yes.
Who had like no production, but they had signed him to a big deal because he had 1 year.
Patriots, Mark Anderson?
Mark Anderson.
Is that right, Mark Anderson?
That's the name. They signed him the same offseason to like another big money deal.
Yeah.
And that was more like, okay, this is more what the Bills do. This guy's got, like, you know, he'll get 6.5, 7 sacks. Sweat, though, might be better than that. I don't know, like, what his win rates are, and, like, we're doing this a lot smarter now, I think, evaluating these players. But to me, any of these ideas, Sweat, Mac, Crosby's not this, but all of these sound to me like consolations for not getting Myles Garrett.
Yeah. Which,
like, Myles Garrett is the name, is the idea. I'm with you. Like, there's almost nothing, like, I guess maybe if you told me it would cost 3 first-round picks, maybe I start to get a little nervous. Yeah. But even I want it so bad because it feels like it's such a perfect idea that I'd almost be willing to do even that.
It's just not going to cost 3 first-round picks, though. Because think about it. It gets back to who's willing to pay that. Everybody would like to have him. Would a team that's not going to win the Super Bowl and maybe not make the playoffs, they'd love to have Garrett help them get there. I'm not giving up 3 first-round picks. I don't even have a good team.
You're right.
Who can afford...
And that team might not think Garrett's going to sign with you in the first place. Right. And at that point, if he's not signing an extension, like New England in their office could say, yeah, we'd trade 3 first-round picks for Myles Garrett.
But where are
but
we
then Myles Garrett tells you, I'm not signing an extension. They go, oh, yeah, we're not giving you 3 first-round picks.
Yeah. He wants to win a Super Bowl. So
right.
you limit it to the teams that can feasibly say, we can win you a Super Bowl in the next 2 years. And how many teams are though? 6? 10? Washington,
yeah.
Buffalo, Detroit. I mean, they have Aiden Hutchinson. He doesn't want to... Kansas City, maybe. They go to Kansas City. Max Crosby doesn't want to go to Kansas City, so take him off of their... We'll take them off of his list. It's just not the same.
The Packers.
Are the Dolphins trying to convince Myles Garrett? Maybe not. I don't think they can feel like they can give up 3 first-round picks. So because the buyers are now down to maybe 10 teams, if he wants to go to a team that's going to win to extend, the price goes down. There just aren't as many buyers. And I just think the Bills should be, of course, weigh in on this. And any, I don't know, I'm not saying I'm not here to listen or to completely dismiss any arguments against it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, no, just use your picks instead.
Okay. Well, can they... The real good question here, because Garrett is a final piece type of idea. He's that good right now. The Eagles have a unit. Like, they have a bunch of guys that are all amazing, that are all good, at least. And the unit as a whole, like, there wasn't just one guy on Sunday that was ripping up the Chiefs offensive line. Like, it was all of them. Milton Williams had 2 sacks on the game. Carter didn't even have a sack, and he was through almost, it felt like, every other play. Like, they had that. You want a 4-man pass rush. Is Garrett all it takes? And you feel like you're home?
Yes.
Like, because you're not, you don't have dominant players next to him, but Garrett, almost like in hockey, like where you bring in a number one center and everybody kind of slots into the right position. Maybe a little bit for the Bills at receiver, too.
Right.
Like Cooper comes in and everybody kind of, you know, now everybody is slotted in more to the spot that they probably need to be in. And if you bring in Garrett, I wonder how much more you get from the other guys. How much more does Rousseau give you when he's not seeing double teams, you know, half the time? Instead of 50% of the time, he's seeing a double team. Maybe now it's 15%. And how much better is Rousseau now because of that?
Because Garrett gets double teamed more than anybody.
Yeah,
and
right.
still wins more than anybody.
Right. So, like, I would expect that you would hope his impact, his ability would positively affect the others. And that wouldn't even be to say you couldn't do other things. If they traded their first round pick this year as part of a package to get Garrett, you've still got 2 second round picks. Like, wouldn't we still be, if they trade for Garrett tomorrow, wouldn't we still be here saying, okay, now you go add another lineman in the second round? You got two, so we can still do our receiver thing if you want. You can do something else, but like they're not done. Go add another star defensive tackle. Not star, but go add a defensive tackle that you might realistically think could develop into a guy up the middle. Because that's the other thing. If you told me there was a Jalen Carter level guy available right now, like that to me is almost as appealing as this star edge rusher idea. Because that's a thing the Bills haven't had. They've really tried. Other than Oliver, right? Like, we've talked about how they don't really invest much at defensive tackle. So, I wonder what they would do with a guy like that. Like, if a Chris Jones-level defensive tackle became available, not an edge, would they do it?
How'd the Eagles get Jalen Carter?
He had off-field issues, and they had a top-10 pick.
Yeah, and the Bills are not going to get a top-10 pick, right? You just can't get one of those.
No.
And you shouldn't expect to get one of those for what? The next, knock on wood, decade?
Yeah.
You're just not going to get those picks. So now you have to kind of, it's kind of like hoping you find your way to Justin Jefferson with the 22nd pick or TJ Watt with the 30th pick. You just have to get lucky enough to draft a guy and have everybody else miss on him in the first round.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built. It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry and get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Meanwhile, in studio, we have a guest in studio to talk a little bit of stadium news and soccer news as well. Peter Marlett Jr., president of Buffalo Pro Soccer, joins us in studio. Peter, we've met. We had a chance to talk about all your that's going on. I know you've spoken down the hall with WBEN. It's your first time with us here. So, first off, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Pro move coming in studio. Not many people come in studio, probably because of the time of day we're on early in the morning.
Yeah, no, coming in, getting to actually see you guys, it just makes it a little better interaction.
Yeah, not bad at all. So, happy to have you here. So, for people wondering, like, you know, who are you? Why are you here talking stadium soccer stuff, Buffalo Pro Soccer? This is a good chance to kind of get to know you and what's going on, because there have been a lot of stories BEN, the newspaper, about a potential soccer stadium downtown. So let's start right at the beginning. Who you are, what you want to do for the listener out there that might be thinking pro soccer, FC Buffalo, how's it all tie in? Where do we begin?
Yeah, so I mean, it would begin. I'm from Buffalo. I grew up in Buffalo. You know, went away to college, played some college soccer, was an All-American in college, and played a couple years professionally after that. But pretty early on in my pro soccer career, I saw what I was as a player, and it was fine, but it wasn't going to take me where I wanted to be. So, you know, still had that passion for soccer and desire to stay in the game in whatever way I could. So stepped off the field and got into the business of sports back in about 2012, I believe it was. Moved home, worked for AdPro Sports for a while, and then spent some time over in Switzerland. I lived in Switzerland, Italy, and then came back and worked for FC Dallas of Major League Soccer. And then prior to this opportunity in Buffalo, I was general manager of the USL League One club in Omaha, Nebraska, Union Omaha, the four teams that I built there. So I managed both the sporting operation and the business operation there. And the four teams I built, we won three regular season championships, two playoff championships, and we're financially a very successful club as well. And that's what led to this opportunity in Buffalo. The league knew I was from Buffalo, and I say the league, I mean the CEO and the executives at the league, knew I was from Buffalo, desperately wanted a team in Buffalo, and that's them. Of course, I did too, but they're the ones that felt it was a perfect market. And in my third season at Omaha, they, you know, approached me with the opportunity to come home and start building this. So it's USL Championship is the league, which is the second division of professional soccer in the U.S., sitting right under Major League Soccer. Unlike American professional sports or traditional American professional sports, it's not AAA, it's not AHL, it's not a farm league. The players are completely independent. The clubs are completely independently operated. Player contracts are held by us. So it's a really high quality on-field product.
And in terms of the, you know, the current state of where everything sits with that league and tournaments, like one thing, it, if you're not a soccer fan, like you have the U.S. Open Cup, right? Like there are crossovers sometimes with MLS.
Yeah, the U.S. Open Cup, and this tournament exists in every country in the world, but here it's the U.S. Open Cup. But the Open Tournament, where amateur teams can qualify for it, but every level of the pros enter into this tournament every year. And yeah, it is, it's luck of the draw who you get paired up against. I will say in Omaha, in 2022, we went to Soldier Field to play Chicago Fire of Major League Soccer and beat them. And standing down on Soldier Field and looking up after just beating the team that calls that home was a pretty cool experience. We then went to Minnesota United, another Major League Soccer team, beat them, and ended up losing in the quarterfinal in Sporting Kansas City in front of sold-out crowd of 24,000 people there. So U.S. Open Cup, and again, that was just draw, right? You have to win the games to move on to the next round. You could get paired up with anybody, though. And we were unlucky, 50-50 shot of whether you host or have to go on the road. And we just lost those coin flips, so I had to go on the road every time. But there's a very real opportunity to host, you know, an MLS team at any point.
I think a lot of people know MLS, the success of MLS in the U.S., you know, the growth of professional soccer. From a USL standpoint, you said the one league below. What does that look like around the rest of the country? What markets are involved, the stadiums, the attendance? What is the product that's USL?
Yeah, so USL had 24 teams in the league last year. It is completely national, divided into an Eastern and Western Conference. It's 25 this year with the addition of a team in Lexington, Kentucky, who just built a brand new 7,500 seat stadium there, which is beautiful. So immediately surrounding us, you know, the teams that would be our closest regional rivals would be Detroit, Pittsburgh, Hartford, Providence, Pawtucket, and Brooklyn has an expansion team coming in 2026 as well. But it is completely national.
And games this league, you said 24 last year. Are they expanding to a bigger number? Is there a goal that USL wants?
Yeah, so they don't have a publicly stated goal, but they have been very public about their desire. So USL operates right now, USL Championship and USL League One. Championship is the league that we have the rights to here in Buffalo. That's the second division, as I said. Mm-hmm. League One is the third division. And then there's League Two, which is what FC Buffalo currently plays in, which is the elite level of amateur soccer in the U.S. USL also announced yesterday that they would be pursuing a league in Division One status, so same level as MLS. And that's all to say they've been very publicly considering and pushing towards promotion and relegation here right. in the U.S., mm-hmm. and I believe that this announcement yesterday is a pretty positive step in that direction.
Right, that's not something we see here, you know, owners with, of course, like every once in a while they could suggest it, like, oh, the NFL, the NHL should have this. Like, that'll never happen. It's got to start kind of at an organic level for growing leagues that are not fully established. Yeah. To get to down into what's happening here and what your goals are to bring a team here and to make it happen, stadium is a big part of it. You mentioned Lexington builds a brand new 7,500-seat stadium. What's the vision for that here right now?
Yeah, so we have been for probably the past 9 months. So I've been back in town doing this since January 1st of last year. So it's been, you know, 13-plus months now. The first 3 months of that were you know, securing the seed funding, making sure the business model and the financials really did make sense. You know, the league certainly said they did, but we had to verify everything. And then going out and raising some capital to get us to this point that we're at today. So about the last 9 months or so have been purely dedicated to locating the ideal stadium site and talking to architects and developers and all the other mm-hmm. various stakeholders that are involved in something like that. And we've gotten to a very advanced point there.
And three sites?
Three sites.
Three correct. Sites. Yep. The one that's getting, I think, the most traction, I think, publicly is the one that's downtown.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So what is the site and what's the vision there?
Yeah, so that site is it's the Cobblestone District. So it is the parking lot, and Sabres fans will know exactly where this is. It's the parking lot between the HSBC atrium and the Buffalo News building, you know, right across the street from the arena. Mm-hmm. That one is getting the most public traction because it is by multiples the most expensive of the yeah. options, mm-hmm. and as such, if we're going to go there, we're going to require public funding, and we've requested that gap to be made up by the state. That is why that's the most public one.
Okay.
The other two and because it's a great site. I mean, it would yeah. you know, create a stadium district. You've got the arena. You've got the ballpark. You've got the casino right there, your Harbor Center. Yep. You know, it's a great site also. But the reason that one is getting the coverage and the other two are not is because that's the public one right now.
Right.
Yeah. The other two, I will say, are in the city of Buffalo and are also in great locations. I hired a firm called CSL International, who some Bills fans may know because they did some market studies on the Bills' new stadium, but mm-hmm. they're a national firm that does economic impact analysis and market feasibility studies for pro sports stadiums. Had them come in and they assessed you mentioned that there are three finalist sites. They assessed all three of these sites, and they all absolutely work. If you're talking about impact on the people of Buffalo and on the city of Buffalo, that very public site does have the greatest impact. Mm-hmm. But it works, and yeah. it's good at any of them.
How much of that is just what's right around it, right, already, like the current infrastructure?
That's exactly right. And then also what's right around it, as in the current just desert of parking lots or whatever to call it. So yes, there's great infrastructure. There's a metro rail going right there, but it's also a tremendously underdeveloped area compared mm-hmm. to the space that's there.
Right. Peter Millett Jr. of president of Buffalo Pro Soccer in studio with us to talk about this stadium idea and the USL. When it comes to the league and the stadium, you know, when it's finally fully built, I don't know if there are numbers that you could just rattle off about this. I'm a dad with two kids. Is what USL looks for here a sporting event that's high level, that is affordable, that is, you know, the growing economic landscape of the NFL and NHL and whatever, you're trying to find a little bit of a middle ground that you can go see a live sporting event, which people, of course, love to attend, but it's just a different level of economic investment from just every consumer that's going to go.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And USL fills that gap in their markets really nicely. But we have based our pro forma and all our financial modeling around an average ticket price of $34 and some change. Now, that will include, as part of that, the safe standing area, you know, the get in the door ticket, which will all in hover right around $15. So, you know, anybody can come in. It needs to be accessible financially to everybody. But I will say that CSL survey that I mentioned earlier, which we got thousands of responses from Western New Yorkers here, did indicate that people also, some people want an elevated experience and mm-hmm. want the suites and want sideline seats, field level seats, stuff like that. And, you know, there will be higher amenity, higher price tickets in the stadium, but anybody who wants to come in, bring a family, is going to be able to do so without blowing up their budget for the week.
You said in the league, it's what? Did you say average like 7,500 for
the stadium size? The stadium size, it varies, but okay. Yes, yeah.
But anyways, what would you, is it too early to know, like even like ballpark, like what size level we're talking?
No, so we're gonna be between 7,500 and 10,000 to start, no matter what site mm-hmm. we end up at. But I will say, all the conversations from day one with the developers and any architects were that is where we're going to start. But we want to build in plans to expand this because we believe that the market can actually support bigger than that. We just need to start, you know, start a little more reasonably.
Is the market, you know, being able to sustain more, like, is that all the way up to the league level? Like, when you mention, like, you know, those that feel like it can work here, mm-hmm. is that a lot of, how much of that is based on like just seeing like what like Bills tailgates are like and just like the overall sports atmosphere of the city?
I mean that's absolutely massive. You know, you've got to look at the demographic breakdowns of markets in USL that work. You're just talking population, you're talking average income, you know stuff like that. And Buffalo matches up really, really nicely and even favorably to a lot of the successful USL markets. But then you got to look beyond that into the sports culture, and everybody recognizes Buffalo's the best pro sports town in the country. I mean, you look at the Bills, you look at, I mean, even the Sabres, despite this drought, you know, I still go to games. I still love it, you know, and that exists in Buffalo, and it's not everywhere in the country.
Peter Marlette, president of Buffalo Soccer. When's the season? Downtown, outdoors, what is the time frame, year to year, start to end of year?
Would there be like timing of games too? Like, how often would it be if the stadium was in the site we're talking about where I'm assuming you would work with like not crossing over the same time as a Sabres game. It might be tough. I don't know.
Well, no, you know what? There's very little overlap in the seasons anyways, especially with the Sabres playing a shorter season than we would like. But no, the USL season starts in middle of March and regular season ends in October, and then playoffs go for a few weeks in November. So, you know, it's mostly spring, summer, fall, and doesn't have a ton of overlap. And that, when you're talking about cadence of games, it's 34 regular season games. Then you've got, so 17 home. Then you've got Open Cup built in there. Then you've got playoffs built in there, which I fully expect we'll be playing in every year. That's going to be the case. So you look for, you know, Saturday night home games. That's your ideal in the warm mm-hmm. weather months, at least. And at any of the three sites, we're talking about Cobblestone, but the other two are very close to there, honestly. So that's going to be the case at any of those sites.
With regard to FC Buffalo, I saw a partnership with a youth academy. You know, we've of course know Nick Mandola. You know him well as well. We've had discussions about FC Buffalo, the role that's had in this market. How do these two entities coexist? Are they sister, brother, franchise? How does that whole umbrella happen if there is a relationship?
Yeah, well, there's definitely a relationship. And I mean, it started, I played for FC Buffalo when I was in college, maybe, you know, I don't know, 16, well, they started 15 years ago, so it must have been in year one, I guess. So I've known Nick for a very long time. Like I said, played for FC Buffalo and its NPSL predecessors before that. But yeah, this agreement with FC Buffalo to bring their FC Buffalo youth programming under the Buffalo Pro Soccer umbrella is something that Nick and I had been talking about for a while, and is something that I'm thrilled to see happen. It they've laid a really good foundation, but we have access to more resources. We're talking financial resources. We're talking coaching. We're talking connections throughout, you know, the soccer world, soccer nation. And this is going to give those youth players, those top young players in the city and in Western New York and Southern Ontario, a direct path to the pro game, which has never existed in Buffalo before.
Is there a timeline in your mind right now that feels realistic for all of this to start coming together?
Yeah, well, for the pro team, I figured. I talked to Justin Papadakis, who's the CEO of USL, yesterday, and gave him a very positive update. We're March of 26. I'm fully expecting us to be playing in a stadium, in a new stadium.
In March of 26.
Looking at pictures of this Lexington Stadium, the one that just got built, which, you know, 7,500-seat stadium, it's nice, you know, does the job, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, it's... we certainly don't want to go smaller than that, because this market is bigger than that. We can support more than that, and we know that without having to prove concept somewhere. But building it in a way that is manageable from day one and manageable from a cost standpoint, and then allowing it to grow as the market proves necessary, that makes the most sense. So, you know, we may be bigger than that, but we're going to be between 7,500 and 10,000, depending on the site that we end up at.
Next thing, you were just mentioning, like, timeline March 2026. Yeah. What's the next thing for us to keep an eye on? Like, what happens from here?
Well, I mean, in the immediate future, we're going to be selecting a site and making that announcement. A modular stadium is what we're going to be building here. And for those that aren't familiar with modular construction, it is very similar to traditional construction in that, you know, electricians, the construction managers, the people working on it will build it very much the same way they do anything else. The difference is it is a prefabricated stadium that is built elsewhere.
But put together like a puzzle?
Exactly, pretty much. Okay.
Didn't Miami's MLS stadium do this?
They play in a modular stadium, and it's spectacular. Yeah. It's unbelievable. So, the reason that I'm so confident in that March of 20, I mean, listen, that the season starts, the 26th season starts probably 13 months from today, you know, like it's very close, is because of the modular capabilities. These stadiums can go up in a matter of months once the site is prepped. And every day I'm having conversations with you know, local developers, local construction managers, and making sure that we can meet that timeline and we should be able to.
Well, if you need anything from me, one thing I do professionally is tell professional sports organizations when they have a bad team name, like the Utah Yeti or the Seattle Kraken. Whatever you decide on, you know, colors and all that, like, whatever.
Listen, we'll run it by you because we're going to need buy-in. So.
I got to be honest, like, I'm self-reporting, I'm just a hater on so many new names, so maybe...
We've got to avoid that.
Maybe I'm not the best for that.
Yeah, all right.
How many of the USL teams are, like, team names versus just, like, whatever, FC?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think USL... You know, I don't know the exact breakdown, but I would bet that it's about, you know, 60% team names and then 40%, you know, traditional.
Looking at Charleston Battery.
Charleston Battery.
That's a cool one.
Exactly. All right.
But a lot of FCs, a Legion mixed in here. And
I see a Tampa Bay Rowdies in here, though. They're mixed in.
Yeah, so Charleston and Tampa, those are, you know, kind of original clubs. Charleston makes an argument... Well, since the Rochester Rhinos folded, to be the oldest, longest-running professional soccer team in the U.S. So you'll see there was a trend in American pro soccer, you know, maybe within the past 5-10 years to try to emulate the European naming structure. Right. And I think we're almost getting out of that a little now. It was a phase, I think.
There's a lot of that. I mean, it's happening. It's crossing over. Utah Hockey Club still exists, and they might stick with it.
They might stay.
And the Washington Football Club almost stuck with it instead of going to Commanders. So, Peter, thanks for coming in and the update, and best of luck moving forward.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
President of Buffalo Pro Soccer, Peter Marlette Jr. here with us in studio. And there's an article at WBEN's website. I'll tweet out. Brayton Wilson had an update on this and an interview also with you and Nick talking about that partnership with FC Buffalo. So best of luck, and I'm sure we'll talk in the future.
Yeah, looking forward to it.